Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Now it's time. Good afternoon, everybody. When I'm doing all right, it's good to be with you. Always good to be with you. Just another day. We're loading up the phones right now. We know a lot of you have questions for Dr. Dana Hawkinson, who has been so generous with his time. From the University of Kansas Health System, and Dr. Dana Hawkinson, who looks just like Daniel Craig, joins us on the hotline. Doctor, it's always good to hear your voice, and welcome back.
Hey, good, thanks. Let me just say something. You know, you both have been generous with all of your messages, and they've all been correct and spot on, and trying to encourage everybody in the city and in the region to do the right thing and be responsible to help stop the spread of this as well.
Thank you.
Well, we've got some questions for you, Doctor. As always, thank you for your time again and the kind words. The United States now has more cases than any other country. The United States now leads the world with the number of confirmed cases, which is a little scary because we also know that our testing lags far behind those in other parts of the world. And there's an article in The Atlantic today that says the most important thing that we can do right now, the first and most important thing, is to rapidly start producing masks, gloves, and other personal protective equipment for doctors and nurses like yourself, because if the healthcare workers cannot stay healthy, everything else in response will collapse. What are you seeing in Kansas City with respect to personal protective equipment?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think if anybody is watching the news from Seattle and especially New York, those areas are really having crunches with supply of the PPE. You know, right now, luckily, being where we're at, and especially with in our health system, we have adequate PPE. But we are seeing more and more cases. We are seeing more cases in the ICUs. If there is a surge, I think we have adequate stores, but we don't know how big that surge will be. There is a real possibility that we would fall short on PPE. And so that is a very real thing. Luckily, we are not there yet. We have to see where these next 7 to 10 to 14 days go and if we can continue to get supplies. But currently, I think we have adequate stores of supplies for that. In addition, we have had many people and many businesses come forward to the health system around the region and nationally saying, we have digital printers and we can make face masks, and we can help you with some PPE. And so we are exploring all those options as well. And those businesses and those individuals have been greatly appreciated.
Two questions, Doctor. The governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, says he expects the apex to reach in 14 to 21 days. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think from everything that I've seen, everything that I've read, I think that is pretty. That's a pretty good estimation, and obviously that estimation can change. But he's getting the best evidence and data that can be presented to him, you know, especially by Dr. Fauci and the CDC. And so I would say that's probably pretty accurate. And so the question is, well, how far behind are we, New York? Will we become New York?
Yes.
Hopefully not. Or will we be some of these other areas that currently are not having as much infection as New York? And our main goal is to continue to try and flatten the curve, to try and stop the spread of infection from one person to another so that we don't become New York.
The other thing that the mayor, the governor of New York said yesterday was that in his state at least, he thinks that the social distancing is starting to show signs that it's working. A, do you agree with that? B, is there any evidence, there may not be, but is there any evidence that, that we are seeing the same thing here in Kansas and Missouri?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope and would agree with him just kind of because he's seeing it every day. Are we seeing any evidence here in Kansas, Missouri? It's really hard to tell because we are so early, and we suspect we are probably a week or 10 days or so behind New York as far as everything goes. But we have said the message before that we felt we possibly implemented the stay-at-home and the social distancing and physical distancing and the self-quarantining hopefully at an earlier stage compared to some of those other areas. And so maybe we, when we do reach that peak and that apex, it won't be as great as they are seeing.
Okay. Can you speak specifically to when you say we are, let's say, 10 to 15 days or repeat what you said, behind New York, what does that mean? Our numbers are clearly not going to look, I hope, like their numbers. We don't have the population and the density. Is that a percentage-based per capita our numbers are behind New York? What does that mean for Kansas City and our numbers specifically?
That would be a percentage. It's also number of infections, and it's based on the fact that we know for some reason this virus seems to be extremely contagious or hyper-contagious compared to other infections. The rapidity with which we are seeing the new infections occur, it's a combination of all of those things, yes. And we hope that we don't reach the apex or to the point that they are. And those that can be done by different things. You know, certainly we are not as, our population is not as dense as them. Also, again, did we implement the self-quarantines, the stay-at-home orders, all of those things in plenty of time to help prevent an increase and a rapid increase, an explosion of new cases. And that is
okay. And on that note, Doctor, New Orleans is facing a virus nightmare.
Yep.
They are saying Mardi Gras may be why, and I would need Sam or someone to look that up. When was Mardi Gras? Can you explain why we are seeing?
It was 3 weeks ago.
It was 3 weeks ago. Why are we seeing what we're seeing, this explosion in Louisiana, and what does that say about what we've done here?
Yeah, I mean, it's all for the same reasons. You know, you have these areas of these mass gatherings and people just in contact with each other, close contact, you know, enjoying it. But you don't know who's sick. You don't know who isn't sick. This virus, again, seems to be pretty easily spread and is very contagious. And so as you get the virus, and maybe you're going home to your other areas, but certainly in New Orleans and Louisiana themselves, they are having a significant amount of infections, having a significant drain and overwhelming of their healthcare systems. And I think it's just due to the fact that there were so many people, you know, possibly like one of these super spreading events that we have talked about. And that's because there's just a mass of people around, and there's just a lot of people to get infected.
Dr. Dana Hawkinson will stay with us in just a moment. So Lionel, John, and the others online, we got a full board, 576-7798. Dr. Dana Hawkinson with the University of Kansas Health System joins us on the other side. Doctor, it's not my fault that you look like James Bond. I'm telling you right now. And don't act like you don't get the joke.
No, I understand. I get it.
Everyone has a cross to bear, sir.
Sorry, Doc. I had to.
That's all right.
God forbid you look like Daniel Craig. I mean,
right?
Yeah. God forbid. Hey, let's take a call. John in Olathe, you are on with Dr. Daniel Craig, also known as Dana Hawkinson.
Hi, doctor. I was wanting to know, you know, like West Nile, Zika, malaria, mosquitoes can transmit. Will this virus have that same impact or no?
Good question. Doctor, were you able to hear the question?
We lost the doctor.
Oh, we lost him. Would he get mad at the playing the James Bond?
No, he's back.
He'll call.
Doctor, are you there?
Hello.
Hey, the question was, I don't know if you got to hear it.
No, I got cut off. All right.
Yeah, sorry about that. The question was, can the COVID-19 be transmitted by mosquitoes as we go into spring?
Uh-huh. Yeah, at this point in time, that's a very good question. I mean, we are getting into mosquito season, tick season. Hopefully everybody's going to be able to go out and hunt or fish or hike if they want. You know, at this point in time, there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that it's going to be vector-borne in that way, so mosquitoes or ticks or anything like that.
Good. Good. Another question, doctor, if you would. There's a lot of talk about making a vaccine. How do we do it? When do we do it? Is the virus changing in any way? So we know from year to year to year, the flu changes and it makes it extremely difficult to fight the flu. And, you know, we look at countries like Australia to try to figure out what our best stab at this will be every year. Do we know, is this a virus that is changing? And what does that mean for us, say, next season?
Yeah, well, that is a couple very good questions. So for the vaccine, hopefully the vaccine is going to be made to a component or an area on the virus that really doesn't change, or if it changes, it doesn't change much. We are certainly working on that. It's hard to tell, and I haven't seen any recent genomic data that the virus is mutating or changing such as flu does. We know that certainly in China there seemed to be one strain that predominated early on, and then there was maybe another strain. We just don't know the data currently, especially in the United States. But the vaccine targets and to what we're making the protection to would hopefully be an area on the virus that really doesn't change much. So they are still working on vaccine trials. We've seen reports about this. And, you know, hopefully we will get to have one. You know, I think they said 18 months was maybe the most recent, the soonest that we could see it. The other question was, do we think that, like flu, it'll go away in the summer? We don't know that. I think we certainly hope that the warm weather, the season change will help that, and the seasonality. Overall, we have said we don't think it will, but the concern is, and especially Dr. Fauci had kind of echoed that last night in things that we've said in the past, is that, well, even if it is, the scary part is the southern hemisphere is now reaching into their winter. So will it be like flu that it'll come back, you know, more aggressive or the same back into the United States and the Northern Hemisphere next year in the winter? That is something we hope doesn't happen, but that is certainly a very, very real possibility and something that we are also kind of watching and planning for and kind of monitoring and certainly on our radar.
Hey, Doctor, we need to get to the news, but when we get back, I want to ask you, just so you can get your answer ready. When we talk about COVID-19, is this something, and don't answer it yet, answer it when we get back. Is this something that we're going to have to get a vaccine for every year like we do the flu? So you go to CVS or Walgreens and you get a flu shot and then you get a COVID-19 shot. And then you brought up an interesting point about the flu and the Southern Hemisphere. I want to delve into that a little bit when we get back as well, if you're willing to stick with us for a few minutes.
Great. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Dr. Dana Hawkinson with the University of Kansas Health System joining us on the hotline. Your questions are encouraged at 576-7798. More with Dr. Dana when we get back here on KMBZ.
If this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say live and let die.
Live and die. may or not be a theme song to a James Bond film.
Yeah.
Dr. Dana Hawkinson joining us on the hotline. Doctor, I want to completely disavow myself from any of this. I have nothing to do with the song choices on the show.
I mean, the Beatles are always good.
The Beatles are always good. But get ready because Madonna's Die Another Day may come next.
I'll pass. Right.
Okay. before we went to the break, I was going to ask you, as we deal with COVID-19, coronavirus, whatever you want to call it, do you foresee a situation in the future, Doctor, where we don't just go to CVS or Walgreens and get a flu shot, but we go and get a flu shot and a COVID-19 shot?
Yeah, at this point, COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, I don't think, and I don't think its mechanics are set up really to mutate in the same way that influenza does. You know, we have a very good vaccine for measles that we get when we're young, and we only need one, essentially. You know, there is a vaccine for the chickenpox virus and shingles, and that's essentially, you know, one set, and we're not needing it every year. Ultimately, we would like to just be able to give, you know, either a dose or two, and then you're protected for life. And so that's the goal of almost every vaccine, is to not have to do it every year, every certain time frame. And I think that's what we would be looking for in this vaccine.
Doctor, I am forcing my children to drink vitamin C packets every day, and they're at their wit's end. What can you tell people to do to try and naturally boost their own immune system, if anything? I mean, I think everyone's doing this stuff. Does it help? And what would you tell people to be doing at home?
Yeah, I think this goes to the larger issue of our daily life has changed. I think for immunity, specifically what you were asking, I think it's all the important things we've known about. You know, have good nutrition, eat your vegetables and get your protein and your carbs and your fruits. Get good sleep. Sleep is very restorative for the immune system as well. You know, unfortunately, there is a lot of anxiety and depression, and that leads to difficult sleeping and difficult doing other things. I think getting out exercising is very good for your immunity. Get outside. The weather is getting good now. But try to find those things and try to change your daily structure and your schedule to now reflect what this new normal is, whether it's a long time or a short time. You know, try to look at those things. Look ahead. There's other things that we need to be doing now. You can maybe, you know, plan for, you know, but we're trying to maintain our sanity in this time because it is very difficult to do, and we have to continue to be vigilant because we are still, I think, very early on in this course.
Yeah. Hey, Doctor, the president came out today, and I'm not convinced this is a bad idea, but I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Came out with an idea today with the governors to list counties based on low risk, medium risk, and high risk. For example, I mean, obviously we're in the Kansas City metropolitan area. There are a lot of people that live here, 2.8 million people in the metro. But you go out to western Kansas, for example, and you can find counties that have 1,500 people in them, 2,000 people in them. You probably don't see your neighbors much of the time. The president is throwing out the idea of listing counties based on low, medium, and high risk, and then reestablishing the economy based on the county's rank. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've just seen just a very little bit about that. I think it's good in theory, and I think it may help. You know, again, everybody wants a good economy. Everybody wants to be out eating and enjoying themselves and out in public and doing those types of things. But as it's low risk now, how quickly will that change? You know, it doesn't take very long for this virus and this infection to get to an area and infect people at an exorbitant rate. You know, should that happen at some of these outside counties, you know, are they going to be able to handle the infections that they have? I don't think it's overall a bad idea. I think there's still probably a lot of details that need to be hashed out with that.
Yeah. Doctor, is there a way, and I know the FDA is important, we have it for a reason, we do drug trials for a reason, but are you hearing anything regarding a fast track? I mean, is there a way to absolutely fast track the trials or the vaccine? And do you anticipate that the red tape will not exist for this, say, as it does for a new heart medication or other things, since it's so critical we get this figured out?
Yeah, I think they've definitely broken down some of the bureaucracy, the red tape. But it's also because we want to make sure, number one, if we're going to be giving that to you, it doesn't cause you more harm. And so that's a lot of it. We need to make sure it's safe. But I think a lot of those barriers have been broken down, especially with the vaccines. We are seeing vaccine trials going on in human subjects right now. They are volunteering. They are sacrificing themselves and volunteering for these vaccine trials. The drugs, it's a little bit more difficult. You know, we certainly are trying to do trials on drugs that we already know of, and seeing if they can be repurposed for this. And of course, you know, we've heard about the remdesivir that's by Gilead that they're using. That's a fairly new drug that's not really on the market, so they're trying to fast track that into trials. It's also a matter of finding these compounds, and whether that's through high throughput, through computer modeling or something to that nature. They are trying to work, but there's a lot of details and a lot of bridges to cross to get there.
Hey, Doctor, let's go to the calls. A lot of people want to ask you a question. Let's go to Julie in, I believe she's in Overland Park. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Yes, I'll be quick. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. I was at Walmart at 159th and Metcalf today, and I pulled in the parking lot, and the parking lot was packed full of cars.
Yeah.
And my question, I have two questions about that. How long does the virus stay in the air?
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that they should start limiting the number of people that go into the store? And my second question is, can you bring that virus home on the bottom of your shoes?
Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, walk around in your house and infect your whole family.
Julie, good question. Doctor, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. A very good question. I'll tackle the second question first. So the virus, what we suspect is, there's been very little data on how long it lives on surfaces, and we've talked about this in previous episodes. Is it for a few hours? You know, certainly we've seen it live on surfaces, and it's been detected for a few days. But what is really the consequence of that? Is it in high concentrations? Is it just the genomic material that we're detecting? You know, in general, this virus is probably not going to really survive that long in the environment. That laboratory test had pristine conditions and was done under very strict experimental conditions. But in general, if it's out in the environment, if it's on the floor in your shoes, it's probably not going to last long. So I would say you're probably at pretty low risk of actually walking on it and taking it into your house and then infecting other people. You're more at risk, certainly, though, is if somebody is ill and they don't know it, and if they either cough or sneeze or wipe their nose, and then they're picking up items and maybe looking at them, and then you come by and pick it up. Now, you know, at some point you may get an itch, you may get some dry eyes, and you're wiping your face. That is absolutely more realistic on how you could catch the infection. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, to her previous question, though, which was, should we limit the number of people that go into a store like a Walmart or a Target or a Hy-Vee?
That's a very hard question to answer. I mean, certainly, if stores are packed, obviously you're going to be fairly closer than 6 feet, but in general, you're probably not going to be in close proximity to those people too much. I think that's a difficult question to answer, and probably one that needs to be done by the companies themselves on how busy they're getting. We know that people still need to go out and do essential shopping and get food and things of that nature.
But to be clear, doctor, if you just touch it, nothing's necessarily going to happen to you. It's when you touch your eyes, nose, and mouth after you've touched it. So if we're all doing this thing that we're trying to train ourselves to do, which is to not, you know, put your finger in your nose and put your fingers in your mouth and touch your eyeballs, is that not one of the best ways to protect yourself, even if you go into a grocery store?
Absolutely. I mean, just being on just being on your fingertips is not necessarily the danger. It's getting into those areas we talked about, your mucous membranes, your eyes, your nose, your mouth. So you're exactly right about that. And if we can train ourselves consciously and then subconsciously not to just not be touching those areas, I think we will greatly reduce the chance of continuing to spread and greatly reduce our own chances of getting the infection.
Hey, doctor, I know you got to go. You got to go save life. You have more things to do than talk to two morons on the radio. On a scale of 1 to 10, if I'm I live alone for the most part, but I'm wiping everything down and I'm running through my 1,000-square-foot house every day with a can of Lysol, spraying everything down, how crazy am I?
Yeah, I mean, it's good to be clean, but if you're the only one there,
yeah,
and you're practicing good hand hygiene techniques and doing it frequently,
yep,
I think you're okay. You can, you know, probably do it once a day. That's not a bad thing to do.
Yeah, but I run around the house screaming, I could walk 500 miles, that song from the 90s by the Proclaimers, and I'm spraying Lysol throughout the house as I do it. Have I lost my mind?
That may be part of the COVID anxiety, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. Hey, doctor, we look forward to talking to you.
I know that you had initially said you had to go at 4:45. Can you stay till 5 or no? Then your call.
Sure. Yes, I can stay.
Oh, you can?
Yep.
Oh, please do. Yep. All right. All right, Dr. Dana Hawkins.
So question before the break, Scott, that I want him to think about. People are really trying to figure out the best way to help doctors and nurses. What is that? Outside of the obvious, which is staying home, if people are making masks and doing this kind of thing, what is the best way to help our healthcare providers right now?
Good question, and we'll get with Dr. Dana Hawkinson in just a moment here on KMBC. Never going to join us on the show again. I mean, come on, Sam. You're killing the guy. Really? Die another day? Really?
Hey, Scott, real quick.
Yeah, Dana.
There is a drive-through donation drop-off. I actually just got this from the University of Kansas Health System. They're going to do this Saturday, March 28th from noon to 2. They are taking medical supply donations for not only the University of Kansas Health System, but also Children's Mercy Hospital. And what they're asking is that if you have unused N95 masks, unopened surgical masks, unopened hand sanitizer or soap, that you can drop that off at the Hilltop campus parking lot at 143rd and Metcalf again this Saturday. And it's all social distancing. You're going to drive up. They've got a setup so that you never touch anyone. They don't touch you. And we wanted to ask the doctor, if you can't help with that donation drive that we're going to put on our social media platforms, what can you do at home? Can people sew masks? Is that helpful, doctor?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, we are not probably accepting homemade masks just because of the fact that the masks that we have now are made under stringent conditions and have been tested for biomedical use and all that kind of stuff. But I think, you know, certainly calling the hospital or the health system or emailing and asking, you know, what can I do? Certainly, again, we've had a lot of people who have come forward and wanted to help us with digital printing and face masks and production of PPE. I think that's all good. This donation drive is good as well. If you have ideas, you know, we are in tough times now, and that can help with creating new ideas, and somebody may have a new vision, and I think contact the health system or the hospital and maybe, you know, give them your idea, and it might be turn out to be very fruitful and helpful.
You know, doctor, I was watching the news this morning, and they were showing a hospital in Queens, and the line was just, you know, obviously out the door and down the street. Would you recommend, and maybe you would not, if somebody thinks they have coronavirus, COVID-19, that instead of showing up at the hospital and maybe putting other people at risk, that they call ahead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would that be preferred?
Yeah, that's been – now, again, I think Queens and New York is certainly an entity much different from what we are. But that has been one of our main messages is 80% of these people or more are going to be able to be managing this disease at home, and they're going to recover. It's that lesser percentage that's going to have to come to the hospital, and even a smaller percentage that's going to be needing ICU care. But when those numbers get great, then the numbers of people who are seeking ICU care are great. But we've always said, you know, if you need medical attention, obviously call 911 if you don't have a primary care doctor. Please call your primary care doctor. If you need medical attention, call 911 or come to the emergency department. But please call ahead before so that we can efficiently get you into the proper area so we keep our other patients and our other healthcare workers safe.
But doctor, and here's part of the problem with this, and this goes back to the anxiety. People don't know when they need emergency medical care. And I know that you're going to say it's not when you have the sniffles or even a fever of 99. Yeah. When do you go? Obviously difficulty breathing, but we don't want to clog the healthcare system with people who maybe have this but aren't really, really sick. So when with COVID do you go?
Yeah, I mean, if you're just sitting at home, it's hard to really give you criteria. I think you know your body, and if your breathing has continued to worsen over some amount of time, whether it's a day, whether it's 4 hours or 6 hours or 8 hours, you know your body best, and if it continues to be worse and you feel worse than you have, and your symptoms continue to progress, whether it's the increased shortness of breath, increased troubled breathing or chest pain or continuing to feel worse, you have to make that decision. There's not a lot of other objective criteria to go by. Most people will be able to just stay at home because they will, either feel a little bit bad for a couple days or for a few hours and get better. But it's those patients that continue to progress over a day or two or several hours that kind of need to seek the emergency medical care.
Last question, doctor, because we're up against the news, but it's a repeat of a question I think I asked you 3 days ago.
Okay.
How is it, but just for people who weren't able to join us the other day, and I think this is an interesting question, how is it that something can be so smart, so invasive, can know where to go, can know when to mutate, can know don't kill the host or try not to kill the host, how can it be so smart and it has no brain?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the battle we've been dealing with ever since we evolved, and it's going on every day. And we've kind of won the battle with so far, if you consider the vaccines that are working or the antibiotics that we have. But there's always more threats out there, and it's about survival. And these organisms have been surviving for millennia before we were, and they continue to do that. And it seems like they're always one or two steps ahead of us, and that's the big issue.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, we're the smartest creatures that have ever walked the earth,
right?
And yet they can outsmart us for at least a time. You know, we'll catch up, but at least for a time, they've outsmarted us.
Yeah.
Hey, doctor.
They seem to be step ahead.
Yeah, doctor, you are always welcome on this show, and I appreciate your time and your generosity with your time. And I look forward to our next conversation, but don't take this the wrong way. I look forward when we don't have to talk to you again.
That would be a great thing. But let's all stay home and stop the spread of this virus.
Hey, doctor, again, you are welcome on this show anytime you want on it. And thank you for your time. Go save some life, and we will talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, that is Dr. Dana Hawkinson. We'll get to the news here in just a moment. The 5 o'clock hour is coming up. Don't forget, after 5:30, we want to hear good news. What is the good news in your life? We'll do that after 5:30 here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at kmbz.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.